welcome to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead, here again to have another conversation with you about some of the stories that matter. I will tell you, folks, I just want to start off by looking backwards. I think we have to look back. And I'm looking all the way back to a movie called The Wiz. Not The Wizard of Oz, but The Wiz with Diana Ross. Do you remember after the witch died and they started singing, "Can you feel a brand new day?" I'm just saying, that's how it felt today. Can you feel a brand new day? I cried when I was watching Joe Biden's speech today. And before we get to our guest, I just need to tell you what that moment was like for me. I was fine when Kamala Harris took that oath. One of the Bibles was Frederick Douglass's Bible, and another Bible was a longtime friend. I thought about the last time black hands touched that Bible. I thought about Barack Obama. So that was really emotional. I have my Delta Sigma Theta shirt on. I got my pearls on for my sister, HBCU graduate, Divine Nine. It moved me. But let me tell you when I teared up. I teared up when Joe Biden said, he looked into the camera like he was looking into my soul when he said, "I will always level with you." And I realized in that moment how much I missed having a president, of wanting to believe in a president who's not trying to fool us, not trying to lie to us, not trying to get over, but trying to do their best to uphold this nation. I got teary-eyed, and then when they sang Amazing Grace, y'all, let me just tell you, Amazing Grace is what my Nana used to sing. She said when things got rough, she'd sing Amazing Grace to turn some things around in her spirit. I started weeping there. And then when the young sister, Amanda Gordon, little sister, got up there and said, "I'm talking about the light, if we're strong enough and brave enough to be the light." What a day. We've reached out to a number of people that we've had on the show just to hear from them. But I want you to know the lines are open for you. It's not just a bunch of guests. It's also about hearing about you, because this is about the American people's president. I want to begin with Professor Leonard Pitts, who's a frequent guest on our show, Pulitzer Prize winning columnist. Professor Pitts, how are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So we just wanted to hear from you. So we've talked about what it took to get to this moment. We had you on kind of giving us some feedback from what happened with the failed insurrection at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. But today, before I have you talk about the moment of Joe Biden and Sister Harris, the fact that the president, the outgoing president, the former president, it's minus 45 degrees at this moment. When we look out with the long eye of history, how do you think, as a writer, as a columnist, as a historian, how do you think Donald Trump's presidency will be remembered?
I think that somewhere in the afterlife, James Buchanan is dancing for joy because he is saying, "I am no longer the worst."
Ooh.
He and Richard Nixon and Franklin Pierce and some of these other guys, they're having a party. They're having a very good time because they are no longer the worst, and it's not even close.
Mm.
It's not even close.
Do you think it would just be, I mean, I know a lot of people want to focus on COVID-19. I think there were some other critical moments, even though COVID-19 notwithstanding, of course. But I think there are some other big things where he missed the moment or just took us in the direction of, away from healing.
Well, as you and I were saying when we last spoke, and it impressed me enough after I thought about it that I wrote my latest column about it, one of the big things that a president does that we tend to forget is that a president sets the tone. A president sets the mood of the nation by, you know, what he and hopefully someday she calls upon us to do and to be. And, you know, as we were saying last time, that doesn't matter. That's not a Democrat or a Republican thing. That's all of them. From John Kennedy telling us to ask not what your country can do for you, to Reagan with his shining city upon a hill, they all try to uplift us. And they go a long way, I think, towards setting the mood of a nation. And I didn't really realize how important that was until we had an individual who set the mood of the nation in a dramatically different way than any president who has ever come before. You know, this guy, and I think that will go down, frankly, as his biggest failure. You know, obviously there's the foreign policy stuff, there's the economic stuff, there's the pandemic. But I think his biggest, or at least one of his biggest failures, is going to be that he dragged us all down to where he is, to be, you know, the mood of the country right now is surly, it's sour, it's anxious. It's a lot of the stuff that this guy is, and I think that that's going to be the thing by which, or one of the things by which he's most remembered.
Now, it's interesting, Professor Pitts. I did not cry when Barack Obama was inaugurated. My grandmother cried. I mean, my Nana wept at that moment. I mean, as having come through Jim Crow, like, it was just for her to see this black man on television taking his oath and giving. She cried. Today, I cried with Biden because I realized how much tension I've been carrying around for 4 years.
Yeah, well,
that I feel like we can set it down for a moment.
It's as we said, we didn't realize until this moment how much we had taken for granted just having a normal human being in the office. And that's not that's not having to do with his politics. That's not having to do with agree with him or disagree with him. It's just having to do with having a normal human being who, whatever his political affiliations are, you could at least trust that he was doing whatever he was doing because he thought it was in the best interest of the country, at a bare minimum.
Right.
You know, at a bare minimum, pretty much all of them, you could give them at least that much. And for the last 4 years, you haven't been able to. For the last 4 years, the routine for many of us has been wake up, yawn, stretch, and check the tweets to see, to see what is today, outrage, humiliation, or disaster.
Yes.
You know, are we about to fire nukes, at somebody? Has he resurrected Frederick Douglass again? You know, what is today's stupidity? What is today's outrage? And at a bare minimum, you realize that, okay, I'm not going to have to do that anymore. I can wake up tomorrow, yawn and stretch, and not have to fear checking Twitter. Looking at the news headlines. I don't know what the headlines are going to be, but they're not going to be Trump said X,
right?
Or Trump did X. And you know, so I think a lot of us, as you mentioned, have been carrying a great deal of tension with us that sometimes you don't realize you have a burden or carrying a burden until you set the burden down.
I like that. Now, let me ask you this. Again, before we get to Joe Biden, I do want to get your feelings about that. I want to talk a little bit about the news withdrawal that I believe is going to happen, that people have been feeding off the energy. I think of different networks that have kind of become the most popular networks because of Donald Trump round the clock coverage. How would you suggest that people kind of come down off that high? Because of Joe Biden, we're not going to have every day is going to be something new. Around the water cooler. It's going to be a lot more normalized, which means the temperature is going to come way down.
I don't know how to tell them how to come down, but I can tell them what they better not do, and that's jump every time this guy, meaning Trump, has hiccups from now on. And you know, as the point was made on CNN this morning, and it's very true. There are going to be times when you have to cover him. You know, he's a former president, and depending on how much power he continues to exert over the Republican Party, that's going to make him newsworthy. But he's not going to be newsworthy in the sense of minute-by-minute coverage that we've had to put up with for 4 years. So I think, it's going to be incumbent upon the news business to deal with that and to reflect that. And if that means lower ratings or lower revenue or whatever, so be it. Because this constant diet of Trump disasters has not been good for the country. And the constant diet, and Biden mentioned this in his inauguration speech, the constant diet of lies has definitely not been good for the country. So,
no, it has not been. Let's look forward. Okay, so today was historic with Sister Kamala Harris. It was historic not to have the outgoing president be there. It was historic having the youngest poet laureate. I mean, she was amazing. And Joe Biden's speech, I really feel, and I want to get your feelings about this, because you've seen a number of presidents inaugurated. And I don't mean all the way back to the Lincoln days. I'm seeing a number in your time, right? So talk about that moment for Joe Biden. Like, what do you think his speech did for people? What was that his rising, shining Lincoln LBJ moment?
I don't know. I don't know that there's going to be a phrase or a single, something from the speech that we're going to be talking about 20, 25 years from now. I mean, most presidential inaugural addresses aren't speeches that tend to live in history. I can think of FDR, I can think of JFK. and Lincoln. I can't tell you what Bush said at his first inaugural. I can't really even tell you what Obama said. I think there was a poem about forcing the dawn, but I can't recall a phrase or anything from his first inaugural. I don't think I will from Biden's. But I think that what will be recalled is this sense that he had, and this passion that he had, almost this desperation of we need to come together, we need to be united, we need to be the United States. And in listening to that, I'm reminded of what somebody said about Lincoln in the depths of the Civil War. They said that he had a mystical devotion to the idea of the Union.
Oh, I like that.
And it's sort of this. And if you think about what Lincoln went through and what the nation, and particularly the North, went through in that war, you could almost say that what Lincoln, that devotion defied common sense.
Right.
you had 3,000 men chewed up in a useless battle in one day. You're losing ultimately 750,000 men, counting casualties on both sides. And at some point, I think I would have been tempted to say, Mississippi, gone. See you.
Right. come on now. Y'all do your thing down there, South Carolina.
Bye.
I'm done with
South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia. I'm tired of messing with y'all. This cost him his health. He had a son die while in the White House.
You know,
all of this, and yet he clung to the idea he would not have a negotiated peace, because that was floated. His political allies were on him were pressuring him to have some sort of negotiated peace with these 11 rebellious states.
Right.
And he would not. His whole deal was the Union. It had to be the Union. And I think there's some of that in Biden. Obviously, very vastly different circumstances, but I think there's some of that in Biden. Some that defies, frankly, common sense, like Lincoln. Because I don't know that it's commonsensical to believe we're gonna have union with the party of white supremacy.
Come on, come on,
and lies and crazy conspiracy theories. I just don't believe it's commonsensical to think we're gonna have union with that. But like I said, it wasn't commonsensical 160 years ago.
Right.
So I give Biden I give Biden credit for his faith and his optimism. It's hard for me to reach it or to share it, but I'm willing to be inspired by his, if that makes any sense.
I like that. I am right there with you, Professor Pitt. Yeah. So it's obvious there's a lot more going on, but I would be remiss if I didn't ask you my last question, if I may.
Sure. Say hi to your daddy, by the way.
I will. Oh, yeah. Already, I'm already planning to get that article. Your new column that you said was inspired by me. I mean, that's what I heard you say anyway. So I'm going to send that one to him for some extra credit brownie points. But Kamala Harris, today.
Yeah.
Talk about that moment. I mean, it was, like I said, it was overshadowed. I mean, it was not her moment in terms of the sense that she's the president. But that was huge for little young women and men to be all around the world to see
it's
that.
Funny. I made a prediction. I made a statement in a speech, not in a call, but in a speech years ago during the Obama presidency. And I said that because Obama was so new and just something we'd never seen before, it was hard to imagine that the next chief executive would be, or the next pair would be, a couple of older white guys.
Right.
I just couldn't see that. I said it's got to be a lesbian, it's got to be a Muslim, it's got to be something to continue this. And what I didn't take into account was just the violent reaction of people to Obama. What we had next was exactly two older white guys. Precisely that. So, with that done and with that having proven such a disaster, I feel like Kamala Harris is a return to what I foresaw back during the Obama years, basically an opening up of America and an opening up of this higher office to the idea that anybody who has the achievement, the economy, and the ability can take this office. I think that Kamala Harris represents, in that sense, the same sort of hope and the same sort of new America that Obama did, and it scared the heck out of all those people. One of the other things I said in the column is that all those people that stormed the Capitol, one of the things they were was scared.
Right.
They were scared. They're scared to death of what I mentioned 8 years ago during Obama's presidency and what they see coming. And Kamala Harris serves notice that it's still coming.
No, it's coming. And you cannot stop it.
I'm a woman, I'm black, and I'm South Asian. What?
Here I am. What? All
and,
up
you
in
will
purple.
Call me, and you will call me Madam Vice President. Please. And excuse me, I'm speaking.
Hello. I'm here for Professor Leonard Pitts. As always, sir, it was an honor and a privilege to speak with you. We'll be speaking with you again.
Thank you. Look forward.
Absolutely. Folks, the lines are open for you. What did you think? Were you moved? Do you have your pearls on, y'all? Like, are you out here celebrating? I know that there are some people that are not celebrating. Not today. We're not taking your calls today. We want to look forward. Give us a moment to have what Leonard Pitts called that mystical devotion to the country coming together. I mean, I am an African-American, but look, y'all. America is my home. I say that. My blood is in the soil. This is my home. And it's because I love America, as James Baldwin said, I can so fiercely critique her. We have Marie on the phone from Baltimore. Marie, how are you?
I'm fine, and I'm very happy that other president has left. But look, I want to bring up something that happened in Sun Paper this past Monday, mm-hmm. concerning Eastern Shore Schools chief files discrimination complaint. Mm-hmm. And her name is Dr. Andrea Kane. Mm-hmm. And I hope that people can read that article.
Yes.
Because she is taken blank at this time. And yeah. She's being called the favorable words about us.
Right.
And I didn't have that much all to say.
No, I'm so glad you pulled that on the table. That is something that we were planning to put on the table for tomorrow's show, because tomorrow's the weekly wrap. Today, we're just focusing on the inauguration, on the historic, as I like to say, moment. But we definitely will follow back up with that. Thank you so much, Marie.
Thank you, dear.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
We have Anita on the phone from Maryland. Anita, how are you?
I'm great, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to say that I turned 60 on Martin Luther King's birthday,
go ahead, girl.
His real birthday, all right? And here's what we need to do. Remember that the rear view mirror is smaller than the windshield for a reason.
Come on.
All right?
Look forward.
So we need to look forward. We need to make sure that we continue to be mindful of our votes. Because votes matter. We need to fill every public seat with people, good and decent people. I don't care what color. Mm. Remember that we elected a president and not a magician.
Yes, he has a lot.
So all
and
the
he needs
things
our
that
help.
Have been done
yes.
will not be undone instantly. So we need to be our highest and best selves.
I like that. Thank you so much.
Our
highest and best self.
Ourselves to success for this man and this woman who have just taken these positions. But they're going to need all of our help. So we need to pray, but we need to work as well as pray.
I like that. Thank you so much.
Right?
I appreciate you. We have Cheryl on the phone from Baltimore. Cheryl, how are you?
Hello, Dr. K. How
hey,
are you?
Hey, Sora. How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm feeling good today. You know, I'm feeling relieved. I feel deliverance is in the making, Dr. K. I do. And I'm going to hold on to that hope.
Good.
You know, I didn't really get to watch all of the inauguration today because I was actually at an eye doctor's appointment. But I tried to catch as much as I could. But, you know, like you said, there's a lot of history that was being made there. And I'm just excited about Joe Biden and Harris and their vision for what they want to do. And what I love about it is that while they were going through the inauguration ceremony, their people were in the White House already working.
Yep.
So
I
it's like that tells me that that's going to be a strong administration. I like the fact that he surrounded himself with strong people who will stand by what they put on the table. You know, and that's not somebody that's just going to back down from what they believe in. And so I'm just going to continue to pray about our leaders, as I always do. One thing I was concerned about, though, was they mentioned that the Homeland Security position has not been confirmed.
Right. That's one thing they're working on. Yep.
Yes. And, you know, I have confidence in them that they will get it done.
Yep.
I do. But I was just like, oh, wow, I think that's the first that has ever happened where there's been a position that has not been confirmed as they go into the inauguration. But
right. Well, they were working on, they have been working on something that Amy Klobuchar said, look, we can get a president inaugurated. We can actually impeach a president, and we can sign legislation. We can do all of that at the same time. She's like, you know, the American public's been juggling babies on their laps and, you know, doing the iPads and the iPods at the table. Like, we're doing everything. It's time for them to do it as well. So they are pushing that forward because we do need to quickly get that position filled.
Yeah. And something else I like, Dr. K, they showed the other country leaders that are excited about the new leadership in the White House.
Yes, it's
that
time.
That the friendship may be, you know, reunited, because to me, all of his talk has been about unifying.
Yep, that's what it's
bringing
about.
About unity. And so I'm just glad for that. I'm just overjoyed right now.
Yes, it's a good moment. I mean, I'm saying that we should have a little bit of joy and happiness.
Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Exactly.
I appreciate you. We have Tim on the phone from Baltimore. Tim, how are you?
Happy New Year, Dr. K.
Happy New Year.
And it is a new year. I will have to say that today, this morning, I was a little depressed because I'm normally at most inaugurations besides 45, but I watching it from my desk at work, I was filled with tears, joy, happiness, hope. All of that emotions came in one, because that's one, just to know that I've seen a black man become president.
Come on.
I've seen a black woman become president.
Vice
and my
president.
Kid's mother is an AKA, so I was screaming 3 to 7 times over that by itself. But then, two, the part that killed me, that just put the icing on the cake, was when that young lady came up there and did that poem.
Amanda Gorman. Yes. Know her name. Thank you so much, Tim. Folks, we're going to hold it here. When we come back, I'm going to open up the phone lines. We have more people calling in, and we want to hear from you. I'm also going to read comments from our Facebook live chat. Today is the day. Can you feel a brand new day, y'all? It's Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us.
This is our historic moment of crisis and challenge, and unity is the path forward. And we must meet this moment as the United States of America. If we do that, I guarantee you we will not fail. We have never, ever, ever, ever failed in America. We've acted together. And so today, at this time, in this place, let's start afresh, all of us. Let's begin to listen to one another again.
President Joseph R. Biden. That was from his inauguration speech, his inaugural address, I believe they call it. When Joe Biden said, look, y'all, just to kind of, I'll put it in plain speak, what Joe Biden said. We done had enough. We're not doing this anymore. I'm in charge and we're going to shut this thing down. That's what I heard. And maybe that's what we need. Joe Biden said we need to stop this uncivil war, that America is deeply divided at this moment. And though we are happy about the inauguration of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and living in their America, we understand that their vision of America is not held by everyone. 74 million people voted for Donald Trump. It's a good time to look forward, but I think we need to look to the right and look to the left and also know what we're faced with. Let me read some of the comments from our Facebook Live and see what folks are talking about. Deborah Schill says, yes, I can feel a brand new day. I'm feeling much better. I'm wearing my pearls also. Thank you, Deborah. Sherry said, yes, all of it. Bill Johnson, Trump may not be president, but there's still 70 million of us. Oh, okay. All right, Bill Johnson, thank you so much for your comment. We're just going to go ahead and delete you. Sheldonia Hiller said, yes, I finally released a mental breath. I was not aware I was holding. I was waiting to exhale. The chaos did not destroy our democracy and us as a people. Lene Scarry says, my life is on the line literally as a teacher, so it just felt different in this moment. Kim Williams said, praise the Lord. At least the daily White House briefing will not be on what is he doing now. Marika Oglesby said, I don't need to hearken back to the men. We need to move forward with the women who are doing amazing things. We've got to change this narrative. Jeffrey Rand Brown said, look, I am so glad that Trump is now a former president. He can no longer blow up the earth. And then finally, Meg Nugent said, very emotional day, Dr. K. I was thinking of you and your V-POTUS, sorority sisters. I am a Delta, my beautiful Madam Vice President, brilliant sister is an AKA, so we're Divine Nine sisters. I'm flying about VP Harris, so I bet you're over the moon. I am over the moon that yesterday was the last day that we've never had a woman as vice president. That day is over. No matter what happens going forward, we can never say we've never had a black president before. We can never say we've never had a black woman, an Asian woman, as vice president. We can't say that. Now, what we still can say is we've never had a woman, a black woman, a Hispanic woman, Asian American woman to be president. That's the final barrier that we have to break. That's the final ceiling. That's the glass ceiling that must be broken. And hopefully, they've already started the process of getting Kamala Harris lined up to run in 4 years. Nina Sloan said, tomorrow will be the first in years that many of us will wake up not having to wonder, what did that do now? We have Bunchy on the phone from Baltimore. Justina, did Joe Biden get out of the car for his parade, or has he been driven? He's being driven. Remember, of course, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama were being driven as well, and they stopped and got out at least two or three times. Stopped and got out. We know there's no one on the street because they're doing a parade across America, but it'll be interesting to see if they get out just for a second, just to kind of be in the moment. Bunchy's on the phone from Baltimore. Bunchy, how are you?
Hello, Dr. K. How you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You know, I was wondering if here we can stop talking about the bad and the evil that's going on, and every day at the end of your show, talk about something good
okay. That
people have accomplished in this world, right? It doesn't matter, black, white, brown, whatever color,
okay. But
speak about the good. You know what I mean, right? Because here we hear too much about the bad. If we start hearing the good about what people are doing, that would motivate people, because hearing the bad motivates people. So let's take and say the good and see where that motivates
people. I'm all for that. You know what, Bunchy? Today is a day that if you look, all we're doing is talking about the good. We're talking about Joe Biden's speech, Kamala Harris being inaugurated, Amanda Gorman shutting that thing down with her poem. We're talking about Tim McGraw, I think his name is. I don't really know. I just know he had on jeans and had a crease in them. That's all I remember. But he was singing Amazing Grace. We're talking about Lady Gaga. Doing it with the big red poof skirt on. This is all joy at this moment. We're doing exactly what you asked for. It wasn't Tim McGraw. It was Garth Brooks.
That's what I want to hear, the good.
Now, I will say, Bunchy,
yes. Given
the fact that we live in this moment where over 400,000 people have died of COVID-19, I can assure you that every day is not going to be the good. It's just today we're focusing on the good. We also want to focus on last night, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris going and laying a wreath to remember the 400,000-plus Americans that have died due to COVID-19. It's not a good time in America. We're just trying to celebrate a good moment.
Dr. K, yes.
We're trying to do it. All right. Thank you so much. We're trying to do it. Now, y'all, I said in the beginning of the show that there was a moment. I'm just going to ask you, and I want you to call and tell me, was there a moment when you teared up today? I mean, just be honest. Look, we family. It's all right. I don't cry for presidential inauguration. I didn't cry for Barack Obama. I did not cry. I was happy. I was clapping. I didn't cry for Barack Obama. I mean, and that was an emotional moment, right? And people were crying. My grandmother was weeping. My dad had tears in his eyes. I did not. I was like, hey, good job, bro. You know, because at the time, I'll be honest, at the time, I started off as a Hillary Clinton supporter. I did, because I didn't even know Barack Obama. Didn't know this young senator coming up. We didn't know who he was until, of course, the Democratic National Convention that shifted everything. And then when the ball started rolling in his direction, I'm like, okay, this is where we're moving. Let's move. And then I started to get enthralled by his words and by his teaching, because he is a law professor at heart. You can tell that he's truly a law professor. I didn't cry at Bill Clinton, even though we had Toni Morrison calling him the first black president. It was Toni Morrison and Maya Angelou. I'm not sure which. I think it's Toni Morrison called him the first black president. I didn't cry because I was like, Bill Clinton is not a black man, even though he's playing the trumpet on Arsenio and all that. Okay, I didn't cry. I got teary-eyed with Joe Biden today. I did. When he said, I will always level with you, when he said that he's going to do everything he can in this moment, when he talked about Lincoln, like, it was just different to hear the president speak about someone other than himself, right? We've gotten used to a president making it all about him. I like the focus on America. Kevin's on the phone from Baltimore. Kevin, how are you? Oh, wait a minute. I want to say, Kevin, that Justina just corrected me. Maya Angelou called him the first black president. Kevin on the phone from Baltimore, how are you?
Great. How are you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well.
You know, it is a great day today, and I was moved today, and tears came. It reminded me of three historical events that kind of led up to this moment. Harriet Tubman, she took slaves to freedom that led to Kamala Harris being elected vice president. Martin Luther King said, I have a dream, that led to Barack Obama becoming president. And John Lewis marched across that Edmund Pettus Bridge, and when he reached the other side, he ended up in Congress. So, you know, it just talked to me, you know, the speech that this isn't a perfect democracy, you know, but we're striving to become a more perfect union. And, you know, with all of us in a collective, we're trying to reach that goal of a more perfect union, bit by bit, step by step. I think about the people that came before, that the Frederick Douglasses and other people, the Kwesi and Fumes and all of them, the people that... you know, Susan B. Anthony's, all of that, you know, men and women who just fought just so that this democracy can become a more perfect union. We still have a long way to go, but we're hopefully moving in the right direction. And I'm proud of my fellow HBCU members and also of the armed forces, my fellow members of the armed forces. So thank you, Dr. K, for your
platform. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. The idea that we are hopefully at the beginning of something new. Maybe with Joe Biden, we can take seriously what we need to do to deal with COVID-19. I do want to stop for a moment and recognize what happened last night. Joe Biden held a moment of silence for Americans who have died of COVID-19. Now, during his inaugural address, he did it again. He asked everyone to stop for just a moment and get quiet. He did lay down a wreath. He said, those 400,000 fellow Americans, moms, dads, husbands, wives, sons, daughters, friends, neighbors, and coworkers, will honor them and become the people and nation we know we can and should be. World leaders around the country rushed in to celebrate Joe Biden. Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, said, congratulations, Joe Biden, on your inaugurations. Our two countries have tackled some of history's greatest challenges together, and I'm looking forward to continuing this partnership with you, Kamala Harris, and your administrations. The Japanese Prime Minister chimed in and sent congratulations. Chile's President sent congratulations. He said, the commitment to democracy, freedom, and human rights recognizes no borders. Mexico's president chimed in and said the three things that are very important right now, pandemic, economic recovery, and migration. The prime minister of Pakistan chimed in and said we need to focus on trade and economic engagement, countering climate change, improving public health, combating corruption, and promoting peace in the region and beyond. The Prime Minister of India chimed in and offered their warmest congratulations. And Pope Francis actually chimed in. They published his message to President Joe Biden, extending cordial good wishes and the assurance of my prayers that Almighty God will grant you wisdom and strength in the exercise of your high office. I pray that your decisions will be guided by a concern for building a society marked by authentic justice and freedom. Together with unfailing respect for the rights and dignity of every person, especially the poor, the vulnerable, and those who have no voice. I willingly invoke upon you and your family and the beloved American people an abundance of blessings. That is from Pope Francis, who sent warmest wishes to Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, and Vice President Kamala Harris. I'm going to go to Mr. P, and then I want to come back and tell you, why did Kamala Harris not wear pink and green? Like, that was the big thing. Was she going to be decked out in pink and green? And instead, she and Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton did something very unusual. I'll talk about that after I speak with Mr. P. Mr. P, how are you?
All right, how you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I cried last night when they showed those candles being lit for the people that was lost to COVID. That was powerful.
Mm, yeah.
I cried like a baby. I went to find five candles before it got dark to light them to represent the loss that we had with the COVID. That was an awesome scene last night, and they showed the candles where they were being lit at the Lincoln Memorial Plaza, and also the pencil thing that stood up in last night, and they showed all of that of the people that wasn't going to be there today.
Yeah.
But that was awesome what they did last night, and they did it today. But a friend of mine, she cried. I walked in on her and knocked on her door, and I caught her at a moment for the speech that Biden did and for the poem that the young lady had read. But last night, I cried like a baby for the loss that we had, especially for the loss I had for a couple of friends that passed away from the COVID. But last night was a crying, no tear.
But and I think it was needed. I think we what we've been lacking in this country, Mr. P, is just a moment to stop and recognize the enormity of the loss. 400,000 lives. That is overwhelming to think about.
Yes, I'm pretty sure a lot of people lost a lot of people to the COVID. I know how I've lost three good friends.
Wow.
You know, and I don't want to lose any more, you know, and the way that Trump went out today, you know, it was just like, okay, I'm going to change the channel. I don't even want to hear it.
Right.
And I waited for the rest of the inauguration to come on, but I had to step out. But last night, I cried like a baby.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I appreciate you, Mr. P. So today, you might have seen, first of all, Sister Michelle Obama, who always comes to slay, right? Michelle Obama looked amazing. She had on a magenta-colored jacket with the matching turtleneck and wide-leg slacks, and she was wearing purple. Now, Vice President Kamala Harris also had on a bright violet jacket paired with her signature pearl necklace and purple gloves. Former Secretary of State and First Lady Hillary Clinton also had on purple head to toe with some type of inky purple pantsuit on. And Senator Elizabeth Warren also wore purple. She had a lilac scarf around her neck. Why purple? Purple is meant to represent bipartisanship, a clear cornerstone of the new administration, hopefully after 4 years of divisiveness, that they're looking to bring together the nation. That red and blue together, of course, brings purple. It's also one of the colors that was used during the suffragette movement. So I want to speak now to Randall Pinkston, award-winning former columnist, to talk about this moment and what does it mean. Mr. Pinkston, how are you, sir?
Oh, please make it Randall, Dr. K. And I'm fine. And I am like many Americans, hopefully most Americans, just very thankful to have witnessed this wonderful turning of the page, looking to the future.
Okay, so now let's kind of talk. You've seen a number of presidents who've been inaugurated, I know, within your time or so. So with Joe Biden, can you speak about the impact of his speech? Do you think this was, as I asked Professor Leonard Pitts earlier, do you think this was his, Abraham Lincoln, LBJ moment, where he rose above this moment to what he has to do to bring this nation together?
If I can go back just a little bit, not years ago, but several months back when Biden, before he became the nominee and before he obviously has now been elected and inaugurated, people were saying that it would take someone like Joe Biden, who had connections to, quote-unquote, both sides of the aisle, who would have the ability to try to reunite this disparate union of ours at this point. To end what he called this uncivil war. And yes, I do believe that his speech spoke to the moment, that he rose to the moment, that he addressed the issues that needed to be addressed, and that he placed the emphasis where it needs to be placed, beginning last night with that beautiful, moving ceremony on the Mall, acknowledging the deaths of 400,000 Americans to a pandemic that has been mismanaged by his predecessor, and that he and his team will now hopefully have to fix and get us on the path to physical healing and health, along with all of the other tasks they have to do. So to answer your question, long answer to a short question, yes, I believe he definitely rose to the occasion and had a Biden version of a Lincoln-esque moment.
Which I think is going to be remembered. I was thinking that we so rarely remember inauguration speeches, but it was the idea of him in this moment telling us essentially that it was going to be okay, right? He was saying, look, that I may not have all the ideas, but I'm willing to give you everything I have to try to make it better.
Yes, and also reaching out to people who did not support him. Now, it takes a lot to reach across the aisle to people who said really mean things about you, who in fact tried to make sure that you were not elected. I mean, just seeing Senator Ted Cruz from Texas, among the invited guests was, I got to tell you, at first I was kind of shocked to see him there. I mean, here was a guy who had tried to keep the vote from being certified.
Wow.
And yet Biden had the grace, and he talks about grace a lot. And if, those of us who go to church a little bit, and when we're not sleeping while the minister's talking, we've heard about this concept of grace. It takes a special person to not only use those words, but practice it. And I think the invitations that Biden extended to his ardent opponents are indicative of his sense of grace and the hopefulness that all Americans can have that he's going to represent everybody. Mm-hmm. He will do his best. Now, whether they listen, that's a whole other deal.
Right.
But he's going to do his part.
Well, let me ask you, someone who is a former White House correspondent, and we have watched over the last 4 years, the media is in an absolute frenzy about Donald Trump. Like, Donald Trump drove ratings. Donald Trump helped build up news stations, really, about this Trump coverage 24/7. So how do you begin to turn that or turn the dial down, but still keep people actively engaged in the political process?
I thought about that, Dr. K, and I really don't know, and I don't even know if it's possible. and you know, and maybe in some respects, we should not be so focused on the political battles as we have been in these past 4 years. That government will return to its sort of, shall we say, boring normalcy, quote unquote.
Right.
Where people can get on with other aspects of their lives and not be so hopped up on lies and half truths and misdirections that social media trucks in. That's my hope, but it's going to be difficult, and it may not even be possible for us ever to get back to where we were, where we sort of listen to each other and give consideration to rational arguments, because social media is so powerful and so pervasive that bad actors have access to it. And if you don't have the wisdom to seek information from disparate sources, then you become a victim of propaganda and brainwashing, as we saw on January 6th. And I'm not saying that everybody who showed up there thought that President Trump had won. Some of them knew he hadn't won, which is even more troubling. But a lot of people actually believe the lies. And how do you get people not to believe what they believe? I don't know.
Now, I just want to give people an Inauguration Day update. The President, Joe Biden, and First Lady Biden are now walking down the driveway of the White House with their family behind them. I think it's really exciting that they actually got out of the car and spent some time walking, which is great. The President is now standing in front of the White House. He's made his way down. So with that, Randall, it's good to look forward, right? And it's interesting to look backwards. But I just want to ask you, as someone who has their fingertips on the pulse of the nation, and we know what happened just a scant 2 weeks ago, do you think that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris can bring this country back together? Or is it the fact that we were never together, so that shouldn't even be a goal at this point? What do you think? I mean, I'm not sure if we've ever been together. I'm thinking back to Charlottesville with Heather Hare. I don't know if we've ever been together at the same table with white supremacists. But just for Joe Biden's sake, can he bring this country together in the way he's talking about?
Can I just answer it in two ways? First, I heard earlier today on one of the cable channels, I guess it was MS, Reverend Al said, pettiness took a flight to Florida.
Mm.
Pettiness took a flight to Florida, quote unquote, Reverend Al Sharpton. And so right away, the Biden-Harris team does not have to deal with the pettiness that has been part and parcel of what came out of 1600 Pennsylvania and to some extent from Capitol Hill for the last 4 years. So that's been eliminated. And they can bring America together if America will listen, if they get some cooperation, if they don't have to deal with the same kind of obstructionist actions that Republicans in the Senate presented to President Obama during Vice President Biden's, when President Biden was, you know, Vice President Biden. So if they get some cooperation, yeah, they can bring us back towards some kind of unity, but it's going to take a while. I mean, how do you change people's minds? How do you speak to people who believe things that aren't true?
I don't know if it can happen. I don't know if it can happen. Let me ask you for my last question to you, and maybe I'm taking it too heavy. But I overheard some people say, well, I can't wait to things go back to normal, to the way they used to be. Well, Randall, the normal that we were dealing with before we were talking about Trump was dealing with Black Lives Matter. I'm thinking in the latter half of Barack Obama's presidency, what drove the news was not Trump, was about black men and women unarmed being killed in the street. That's not the normal we want to go back to.
And Dr. K, you have put your finger on something that I was hoping to hear and have not yet heard, which is the urgent need to change the laws in every state in the union that now provides this qualified immunity to law enforcement officers who can shoot people in their garage, shoot people in their backs while they're holding onto their T-shirts, and then be cleared because they are acting under authority of their duty and the so-called feeling of being threatened. Those laws need to be changed. Anybody else who would shoot somebody and kill them would at least be brought into court and put on trial before a jury of their peers. Why should police officers be allowed to be judge, jury, and executioners? Yes. And by the way, has anyone noticed that most of these people, in fact, I think all of the people who've been killed by cops, they're unarmed.
Yes.
It's not like they're in a shootout with a robber or somebody who's assaulting another human being or in a knockdown, drag out fight, exchanging gunfire. The people who are being killed on camera are unarmed. That demands some change. And so, Dr. K, I'm absolutely with you. To go back to where we were does not get us to where we need to be.
I like that. Randall Pinkston, award-winning former White House correspondent. We thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you for inviting me, Dr. K, and great show today. And give my regards to a brother Pitts when you speak to him again.
I will. Thank you so much. Folks, let's just make another note as we go on the break that the other reason why folks are wearing purple, because Shirley Chisholm, the first black woman to run for president, who, by the way, ran for president the year that Joe Biden entered into the Senate, often wore purple. You know, I don't know if you guys know Shirley Chisholm, who's also a member of Delta Sigma Theta. My soror was the first black woman to run for president, says she did it so she can coalesce the power of black people, of women, and of immigrants so she can have political power at the table. I'm going to hold it there when I come back. I got Cornell on the line. I have Troop on the line. And I have a line for you. Stay with us.